Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Sullivan County has a new public health director, Dr. Jesse Moore, who has experience overseeing healthcare services at Garnet Health and a background in public health education. She's bringing both clinical and community health knowledge to the role. Radio Catskill's Patricio Urbayo speaks with Dr. Moore about her work with those healthcare providers addressing gaps in specialist care and improving health outcomes in rural areas. Empowering Youth, Sullivan 180 hosts Martin Luther King Jr. Day of Service Summit. We'll learn more about how the Sullivan County Youth Summit has grown and evolved over the past 4 years and how it's impacting students. A preview of tonight's Kingfisher Project with host Bill Williams. And it's a new year for new growth. But the Sullivan County Democrat's health and wellness columnist says nothing changes if nothing changes. Moving toward health with Maggie Fitzpatrick. First the news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Corva Coleman. President Biden is using his executive authority to create two new national monuments in California. NPR's Deepa Shivaram reports.
The two national monuments are Chuckwalla and Satitla Highlands. Their designation means the land will be protected from development and preserved for its significance to tribal nations and ecological importance. For example, the Satitla Highlands Monument includes a dormant volcano and is home to the longest known lava tube system in the world. The White House says with these two monuments, Biden is setting a record for the most land and water conserved by any president. It will also establish the longest stretch of protected land in the continental United States, about 18 million acres of land stretching through California, Arizona, Nevada, and Utah. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News.
The Minneapolis City Council has voted to enter into a federal consent decree with the U.S. Justice Department. The federal agency investigated after then-Minneapolis police officers murdered George Floyd in 2020. Officials found a pattern of racial discrimination. Minnesota Public Radio's Estelle Timar Wilcox says officials hope a judge will quickly approve the decree for the Minneapolis Police Department.
The department will have to draft a new use of force policy. It bans chokeholds and neck restraints and limits the use of pepper spray. One of the big concerns centered around investigations into a complaint against an officer. Those will now continue even if an officer quits or retires.
Estelle Timar Wilcox reporting. Forecasters have posted dangerous wind warnings for the Los Angeles area. The National Weather Service says these winds could gust to hurricane strength today and knock over huge trees or even tractor trailers. Meanwhile, forecasters have posted cautions for exceptionally cold weather in the south this morning. Some Gulf Coast areas from Texas to Florida could see temperatures near 20 degrees. The weather cautions come as parts of the central U.S. and the Mid-Atlantic recover from a major winter storm. States from Missouri to New Jersey got heavy snow and ice. Stocks opened mixed this morning as the Commerce Department reported a widening of the U.S. trade deficit in November. NPR Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrials rose about 40 points in early trading.
The nation's trade gap grew more than 6% in November, topping $78 billion. Exports were up during the month, but imports rose even faster. Both exports and imports often depend on longshoremen. Dock workers from East Coast and Gulf Coast ports are back at the bargaining table today with shipping companies, hoping to reach a contract before a January 15th deadline. The dock workers suspended their strike after a three-day walkout this fall. The two sides have agreed to a 62% pay raise over the next 6 years, but still have to come to terms over shipyard automation. Asian stocks were mixed overnight, up in Shanghai and Tokyo, but down in Hong Kong. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR. Chinese state media have increased the death toll from today's earthquake in Tibet. At least 126 people have been killed. The U.S. Geological Survey says the quake's magnitude was 7.1. Reports say people are still trapped in rubble. 1,000 homes were damaged. The number of transgender teenagers in the U.S. is extremely small. That's according to a study published yesterday in the journal JAMA Pediatrics. NPR's Selena Simmons-Duffin reports that small group has been the subject of intense focus from Republican lawmakers in the last few years.
The study was conducted by researchers at Harvard and Folks Health, a virtual LGBTQ healthcare company. They used a data set of private insurance claims that included more than 5 million adolescents and found that less than 0.1% of them are transgender and receive gender-related medicines. Here's lead author Landon Hughes of Harvard.
It's a very, very small number of people, and has managed to eat up all of the oxygen in our political discourse over the last few months in many ways.
The incoming Trump administration has pledged to enact a number of policies that would affect this small group, including a federal ban on gender-affirming care for youth. Selena Simmons-Duffin, NPR News.
The body of former President Jimmy Carter will be moved today from the Carter Center in Atlanta to Washington, D.C. He will lie in state in the U.S. Capitol Rotunda until early Thursday morning. Mourners will then hold his state funeral. Carter died last week at the age of 100. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation. For nearly a century, supporting efforts to promote a just, equitable, and sustainable society. More at Mott.org. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Sullivan County has a new public health director, Dr. Jesse Moore. Dr. Moore has extensive experience overseeing health care services at Garnet Health and a background in public health education. She'll lead a team of 60 staff members responsible for public health services throughout the county. In her new role, she says she aims to address critical health challenges in the community, drawing on her expertise in both clinical operations and public health. Dr. Moore spoke with Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio about her work with healthcare providers, the challenges of specialist care, and her plans to enhance health outcomes in rural areas.
My name is Jesse Moore. I hold a doctorate in public health with a focus on health policy and management. I have, in one way or another, been working in the field of public health since I was a teenager. I just didn't know that's what it was called. And I always say most people, including my own family, didn't know what public health was probably until COVID came about. So that was really the first time people started to understand. But it goes back a long period of time. I really started out being a peer educator when I was in high school, part of a program in my school district to go in and talk to the middle schoolers about safer sex practices and HIV transmission. And I said, wow, I'm really good at this. And how can I just talk about healthcare and prevention for a living? And it took a couple of years to figure out the path that I was going to go down, but I was very lucky to see that New York Medical College in Valhalla had a public health program. And that's where it all started. I had went to an open house and applied. And in 2010, I graduated with my master's in public health. And then after giving birth to my third baby in 2018, I decided, hey, let's add a little bit more onto my plate. And I applied for my doctorate and went back to New York Medical. And that's the rest is history. I was able to take classes and then write my dissertation and graduated from New York Medical again in 2023.
Now, you have previous roles before you became Sullivan County Public Health Director. You have previous roles in Garnet Health and Planned Parenthood. How do those two roles sort of prepare you for this position?
Yeah, absolutely. So the time I spent at Garnet Health was wonderful. I was working in the community health department with the main focus as the physician liaison. So I was overseeing multiple, if not all, of the different service lines between all three of the hospital campuses, Middletown, Harris, and Calicoon, and working directly with the community providers, all of the different doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, everyone that is utilizing the hospital services, referring in, referring out. And it was such a great opportunity to have a lot of that face time and see what we have available, but also maybe what we're lacking in the different communities. So I wasn't, for the first time, most of my career was working directly more hands-on with the consumers or the individuals in the community. This was the first time that I was really working on the opposite end and working closely with the providers. And it was such an eye-opening experience to see how many of the different resources that we had available in the communities that the providers were not aware of, or they were aware of it, but there wasn't an easy way to do that warm handoff to make sure that the providers were referring patients to these other resources, these other non-for-profits that exist that are right here in our own backyard. So that's one of my favorite things to do. It's also something that I spend a lot of time with the students because I also teach as an adjunct at Toro College of Osteopathic Medicine in Middletown. And one of my favorite things there is to bring people from Orange and Sullivan County in who work in the field to speak directly to these future physicians, because I want to really capitalize on these are the new doctors. They're going to be coming out and they're going to be working in the Hudson Valley in the future. And I want to catch them before they even become doctors, because I've seen that there's the missing piece. That component is not there. We have amazing resources, but we don't necessarily utilize them to the best of our ability.
Oh, that's great.
So that was Garnet. I could keep talking. I loved being there. I loved everything I was doing. I spent a lot of time working as the senior director of education and outreach for Planned Parenthood Mid-Hudson Valley. That was prior to their merger. And I was there for over 9 years, and I worked my way up from being a health educator to a coordinator to finally the director. And that was just such a great opportunity because, like I mentioned before, my roots were really in reproductive and sexual health. It's a area of interest that I've always had. And like I said, I was very comfortable talking about it. So I figured who better to do the job. And at that time, we were overseeing Orange, Ulster, Sullivan, and Dutchess counties. I have been working up here in Sullivan County in some capacity for my entire career, because I was up here even before that when I was working with Maternal Infant Service Network. I'm very familiar with a lot of the different programs and very excited to be in this role now to make sure that all of those programs and services are being utilized to the best of their ability.
Yes. Yeah, so now, you know, you said you spent much of your career in Orange County, but you're with Garnet Health, so you know the sort of differences between Orange and Sullivan County when it comes to healthcare. You know, in your position now, what are some of the sort of the challenges have you seen in Sullivan counties that are different from those other neighboring counties, let's say Orange or Ulster County?
Yeah, great question. That was a great benefit, is having had the hospitals in both counties and being able to work with people. I also had the opportunity to really hear what the Sullivan County people were saying and the frustration that they are feeling when they want more services up here. They don't want to travel down into Orange County. And that's something that I really did hear. And it's not something that I can fix overnight, but it is definitely one of the biggest things that I did take away from some of these town halls and these meetings that I had attended, is that Sullivan County wants more access. And I understand that. It's the same. I don't want to have to go an hour and a half away to get a procedure. I don't want to have to go into the city. There's a lot behind that. And being able to access care closest to home as possible is a really big thing. And especially when you're living in a more rural community like Sullivan County, where transportation may be a little bit tricky, here, being able to get more care closer to home is very important. And that's something that I understand. I know that transportation has come up for many years when we survey or we're asking people about what we need more of. Being a part of the Department of Public Health now and understanding that is something that has been taken into consideration over the past 10 plus years, and trying to find ways to make it easier for residents to get around and to get to the different things they need is great. The unique needs of Sullivan County versus Orange County, I learned a very long time ago that it's not possible to just replicate what we're doing in one county to the next. When I was with Planned Parenthood, between Orange, Ulster, Sullivan, and Dutchess, I had staff in all four counties, and it was never possible because the people are different, the geography is different, everything, the needs are different. A very long time ago, I was like, okay, we might have a base plan, and these are the overall goals that we're trying to reach, but we're going to have to come up with a very different approach and a different work plan that is going to best fit the needs of that county. But even within our county, it's very different. We're not going to approach Monticello in the same way we are Liberty, in the same way that we are Youngsville or Jeffersonville. These are very different areas and are going to have different needs. So I think that's very important to keep in mind, is that we can't just replicate. We have to ask, what do you need? And this is what you need, but this is also what we're telling you. So we have to make sure that we have a nice balance between what the community is telling us and also what we know is going to be important for them. A lot of that is just asking questions and listening.
Yeah. Oh, my next question was, what are some of your top priorities as you step into this new role? And you've already mentioned a couple of them. And transportation is one of them.
Yeah.
Access to care. It's a big one. Folks are going to Orange County. That is great if you live, you know, near the border of Orange County. But if you live up in by Roscoe or Livingston Manor, going to Middletown, it's a trip. to get down there if you have transportation. Yes. And if you don't have transportation, it's even harder to get down there.
Yes. Yeah, nearly impossible. I personally have experienced it. My youngest child spent over 2 months down in Westchester in the NICU when she was born, and I had two small kids at home. And I remember how it was nearly impossible. And I did have reliable transportation, but I didn't always have childcare for my other kids or all of the many things that can pop up. Just the fact of knowing that your loved one is over an hour away is a lot in itself. And then trying to figure out your life around that situation. And we know that people are going to heal better and they're going to feel better and they're going to do overall better when they have the support of their family and their loved ones around them. And trying to keep people closer to home is always the ideal. And I do appreciate that Garnet Health really has done a lot with that in bringing a lot of the Columbia doctors up closer to the area. They're working mostly out of Orange County, but maybe it's a possibility of getting some more of those hours and clinic time up here in Harris. And I think that would be fantastic. So slowly we're getting people out of the city and up our way into the Hudson Valley. And I think that's great.
And one of the biggest concerns that we have here is substance abuse with opioids epidemic. We were one of the, I think we still are, the highest overdose rates outside of New York City. How do you plan to address the sort of the mental health, substance abuse prevention issues we have here? You mentioned it one year, the press release that came out introducing you from the county, you mentioned that you're working with Commissioner John Little and some of these things. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. No, John is fantastic. And he leads an amazing team here that has already been doing incredible work around those areas. I had the opportunity to attend the Drug Task Force Coalition a few weeks ago and to really just sit back. I wasn't even employed here yet, but it was a great opportunity to attend, sit back and listen to everything that the team here has been working on already. And it is incredible. For the time being, I just want to listen and see. I want to hear what's been going on, what they have been trying to do, what they would like to do. There are some amazing employees here at the government center in working for the county under public health and human services. I just want to see what has already been working on. I have a lot of experience and understanding of incorporating different behavior change theories and models. And when we're dealing with drugs or alcohol, different types of substance use, as well as what comes with that. From there, then we do get into my background with unprotected sexual activity and the increased incidence of sexually transmitted infections in the community. And those are communicable diseases and the spread of things in that manner. So all of this goes hand in hand. And that's one of the things that I'm very excited about, is being able to work hand in hand with the individuals who have been targeting the substance use issues within the county, because it is substance use, mental health, all of that does fall under public health concern. And being able to take a look at the different social determinants that are affecting individuals in our own county and see how can we address those, because very often there's underlying issues. It's not what's on the surface. It's being able to identify and assist with those social determinants that are having an effect on an individual before we can really make any significant change. But I'm very excited because there is a lot of great that's already been going on, and I'm happy to be a part of it and bring in some new ideas to the table.
Dr. Moore, before we go, are there any final thoughts or messages you'd like to share with Sullivan County residents?
Other than I am extremely excited to be here, I love everything about Sullivan County. I have really enjoyed everyone that I have worked with. Like I said, in all of the different jobs, different places that I've been over the past 20 years, Sullivan County has always been a piece of that. And I've always had such a wonderful experience up here. Really looking forward to future collaborations and hearing what the different employees from different non-for-profits or different healthcare facilities in Sullivan have to say, but even more so hearing what the community has to say, where their needs lie and what they're looking for, and seeing how we can bring those two things together.
We're talking to Dr. Jesse Moore, Sullivan County's newest public health director. Thank you so much, Dr. Moore, for talking to me. And I say welcome to Sullivan County. Welcome. Congratulations on the new position. And I'm sure we'll talk to you multiple times throughout this year, checking in with you, finding out what's happening in public health. Yes, definitely. Definitely. Thank you so much for this.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having me.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we've got a preview of the 4th annual Martin Luther King Jr. Day of Service Youth Summit. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Matt Hurtado. Join me on a journey where pixels meet melodies and controllers become conductors. This is Virtual Soundscapes, the show that transports you to the sonic realms of video game magic. In this journey, we'll uncover the hidden treasures of video game soundtracks from the classics to modern day, and speak with industry veterans. Join me every Thursday night at 10 p.m. only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
I am Stephen Dubner on the next Freakonomics Radio. You may have noticed that universities are having some trouble these days.
I do think there needs to be a reckoning.
But this isn't the kind of trouble you may be thinking.
That paper has three experiments, and at least two different people appear to have committed fraud for at least two different studies.
Why is there so much fraud in academia? It's next time on Freakonomics Radio. This afternoon at 1 o'clock on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The 4th annual Martin Luther King Jr. Day of Service Youth Summit takes place Friday, January 17th at SUNY Sullivan. The event is designed to empower high school juniors and seniors to become agents of change. The summit begins with a screening of Dr. King's Blueprint for Life speech, emphasizing the importance of self-belief, determination, and commitment. Students then participate in workshops and collaborative activities focused on fostering community service. Joining us now with more is Sullivan 180's Senior Director of Prevention Programming, Amanda Langseder, and Naquan Holman of SUNY Sullivan, Coordinator of Tutorial and Student Service. Student Success Services. Wait, I got it wrong. What is it, Naquan?
It is the Coordinator of Tutorial and Student Success Services.
That's it. Hi, welcome. Amanda, remind folks again about the purpose and vision of the annual Martin Luther King Jr. Day of Service Youth Summit.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for allowing us to be here and talk about this great day. I can't believe at this point it was about 5 years ago when the first collective, the network of organizations, all youth-serving organizations, came together around a rather terrifying statistic. We had the highest rate of disconnected youth in all of the Hudson Valley and an alarming rate compared to the rest of the state. And this group of organizations wanted the young people in our community to know that we are here for them and that they truly have doors of opportunity here. That's Martin Luther King's words, look for doors of opportunity. And indeed, we do have them here in Sullivan County, and we have great community resources. So that those organizations had this long discussion about what was it that we could do after the pandemic to bring students together, particularly juniors and seniors, students who are really about to embark on this next step of their fabulous future. How do we let them know we're here for them, that they have a sense of purpose, that they have a sense of somebodiness to offer to our community and to the world? And out of that conversation came the first MLK Day of Service Youth Summit, again held on the Friday of MLK Day weekend, as it is every year, to let students know what's here and to connect them with that sense of somebodiness and their sense of service. Because most of us know MLK Day is not just a day off, it's a day on. It's a day to provide some type of service to your community and give back. And so that's where it all began almost 5 years ago now.
And this is the first year that it will be held at SUNY Sullivan. Naquan, how did that come about?
Yes, this is the first year that is going to be Yes, it's the first time it's going to be held at the college. Luckily, I was blessed to be able to connect with Amanda last year and be a facilitator. And I was able to connect with a lot of youth and share my story with them and let them know what I went through growing up in the county. And after doing so, I had a great experience. And one day, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, at a book festival. Mm-hmm. And she had told me that they were looking at different venues and where they were looking to have the next MLK Day Summit. And I mentioned the college might be a good place. And lo and behold, here we are. It's coming to fruition.
And so you mentioned you grew up in the county. You have this role where student success is in your title, even though I bungled it in the beginning. How do you hope to inspire juniors and seniors at this event? And why do you think it's important so much to empower youth today in this way?
So the youth is our future. It's something that a lot of people used to tell me when I was younger, and sometimes I didn't understand it. But now, being at the age and having all the experience that I've had, you know, growing up in Monticello, graduating from Monticello, and getting a little bit of experience, I do know that the youth is the future, and giving them the opportunity to get some growth and experiences shared with them to let them know what's out there and help them find their purpose. The sooner that I feel like youth are able to find their purpose, the sooner they'll be able to live a more fulfilling life. They will be able to do a good job of pursuing things that align with them. And being able to do that for myself was good. And I got that through things like the MLK Day Summit. For me, it was Boys and Girls Club when I was younger. I met older people who shared their story with me and let me know the ropes and everything. And I feel like the MLK Day Summit will do that for a lot of the youth that we'll be able to connect with.
This year's event, keynote speaker is John Johnson. Amanda, what do you hope attendees take away from his message, and why was he chosen as this year's speaker?
Yeah, absolutely. We had a committee, that really dove into various keynote speakers and who we wanted for this year. Esther Fitzgerald, specifically from the college, from SUNY Sullivan, said, you know, hey, there's this gentleman, John Johnson, who delivers this message about purpose, about knowing himself that, you know, that he had been through many struggles, including struggles that may have taken his life, and yet he had come through it all and was here for a purpose. And he shares that purpose and that message with students. He really inspires students who feel unheard. And that's what hurt that original group of organizations, that students felt like they weren't being listened to, that they didn't have a voice that mattered in our community. And John Johnson is going to speak directly to those students and tell them that not only are they here for a purpose, but that voice matters here in Sullivan County. We need them. We need their voice. They have beautiful messages and beautiful changes to make here. They are agents of change. And I think that John Johnson, with over 10 years of experience, he's going to come here with his incredible message and inspire the students. And then the students are actually going to go into workshops, 10 different workshops across the college campus, where they're going to dive into Martin Luther King's quotes. And they're going to learn more about MLK's words. They're going to connect with those words and then come back together as a larger collective in the afternoon to celebrate those words and really talk about how Martin Luther King and this day of service can inspire each and every one of us to be of greater service to our community here.
That's an interesting way of approaching it with these workshops. So diving into the quotes.
Yeah.
How do these workshops and activities then align with the principles of Dr. King? Go ahead.
Yeah. I'll tell you. So belief, determination, and commitment are the three themes of the Blueprint for Life speech. And so the students hear that all throughout the day. In fact, the teams that they're broken up out into, the 10 teams, are the belief team, the grit team, the resilience team, the determination team. So they're going to hear these themes all throughout the day, including even in their team names. So the themes will keep coming around. There's also two items. One is the Tree of Service, and the Tree of Service will be up in the cafeteria as the students are having lunch, where they'll actually event for vape-free messages and staying vape-free. There's all sorts of community service projects that students are going to be able to pluck off of that Tree of Service. And they are lastly going to be able to use the Door of Opportunity. The Door of Opportunity is a real door at the MLK Youth Summit. And the students write on a card what Door of Opportunity they're looking for. Did they discover something at the summit? Like, did they learn about My Brother's Keeper or Action Toward Independence or tobacco-free action communities? Did they learn about an organization that they want to get involved in? Did they learn about fire and EMS services in our county? And did they learn about radio and local radio and want to get involved in that?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're looking for a Door of Opportunity, and they can put it on that Door of Opportunity card. And then the committee and their school representatives are going to help them with that.
Now I understand there's an optional after party this year. Mm-hmm. What made you decide to add that part to the event? And how does it contribute to the experience for students? I imagine that the social component is important.
Yes. Last year we didn't have an after party, but this year we decided to, because we want to give students a chance to kind of digress and break down what happened through their day with their peers in a more relaxed and calm environment. And I think that's important. Just to be able, because they're going to be in a lot of programming throughout the day. And at that moment, they'll be able to relax, enjoy, you know, hanging out with their friends and meeting other people. I feel like the social aspect is very important, especially at that age, to connect with others.
And yeah. How are folks selected, or do they self-select? How do folks become involved?
That's a great question. So each school is really only provided a certain number of slots. So I want to be clear that we are already sold out. We are sold out. It's a free event, but we are booked out. We have 154 students registered this year. I'm so excited about that. And really, it's student interest. So the MLK contact at each school building puts up flyers, shares the information with their groups and with their students. Has to be high school juniors and seniors. Again, we're looking for those students students who are really ready to take some of the next steps. And, you know, I want to mention the after party again, because this is one of the only opportunities where students from all over the county, all of the districts, come together in a non-competitive way. This is not a sports activity. Mm-hmm. This is you're coming together to really make some friends from other schools, to connect with other students in a meaningful way, learn about their experience in their school district and then what you're going through, and maybe compare what's different, what's the same, what needs to change in our county. But then the best part of this year is that those same students who've had this really full day just get to chill at the after party, listen to some good music, relax together, and maybe make a new friend that they'll have for life.
Well, that's important, meeting new people that you may not encounter otherwise, right? I mean, it's such a broad county. You don't know everybody at every school, and a chance for folks who are participating in this common theme, this common day of service, to interact. I think today the adults call it networking. I remember.
This is just chilling.
This is just chilling. But I mean, a chance to meet other folks who are doing the same kind of thing. Again, that's coming up this Friday at SUNY Sullivan. You also have a bunch of folks who are helping you put this together. Do you want to give them a shout out?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because this event is a true collective impact event, and it would not be possible from the very beginning if all these organizations didn't come together. Obviously, SUNY Sullivan this year providing us the space and the hospitality, huge. The Center for Workforce Development has always been great about connecting students to more doors of opportunity. Action Toward Independence, great partner. This year, they're sponsoring the MLK journals. Every student will walk away with an incredible journal that has prompts throughout for them to really start thinking about those next steps in their life. SALT, Sullivan Allies Leading Together, always a great partner. Hope's Compass, big part of our project, Go Beyond Greatness. My Brother's Keeper, the Sullivan County Youth Bureau actually is helping to sponsor our keynote speaker, John Johnson, this year. So special thanks to the Youth Bureau. Tobacco-Free Action Communities, and Today's Students, Tomorrow's Teachers. And there are more. Public Health just got involved. This program actually is based on us talking about the social determinants of health. And so, you know, it's interesting that we're just hearing from our new public health director, and she has a passion for the social determinants of health. Well, that's where this MLK Day Youth Summit came out, and we'll have public health with us, of course. So too many partners to even mention. I hope I didn't forget anybody, but I'm so proud of this collective impact project and the collaborations that are making this happen for 150 very deserving students in our county.
And before we go, just to mention, more information at sullivan180.org. SUNYSullivan.edu. Before I let you guys get out of here, I just wanted to find out what you think the biggest impact will be after this, you know, based on all the stuff, all the prep you've been doing. We haven't done it yet, right? But what are your hopes for this Youth Day of Service, as you see these students participate and then go out in the community?
So from last year, I've seen students reach out to me from having an experience at the MLK Day Summit, and it makes me think of a quote that says, if you want to go far, go alone. If you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. And I think that's what the purpose of this is to show community collaboration, and to show that you have resources in order to propel you to where you want to go and help you reach your goals.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. I mean, Naquan, approached me after the last summit, and he taps me on the shoulder and he says, I want to be involved next year. Get me involved. And not only is he involved, but he kicked open the door of the college for us to be able to be there with the summit and inspire the next generation that's here in Sullivan County to know that they've got this beloved community, that they really do have resources here and adults that care about them and want to see them walk right through those doors of opportunity and grab hold of it all.
That's Sullivan 180 Senior Director of Prevention Programming, Amanda Langseder, and Naquan Holman of SUNY Sullivan, Coordinator of Tutorial and Student Success Services.
Woo-hoo.
Or Amanda has changed that now to Director of Awesomeness.
Awesomeness, absolutely, yes.
Have a great youth summit, and thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll look at a preview of tonight's Kingfisher Project with Bill Williams. That's after a break. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Bill Williams. Join me for the Kingfisher Project tonight, when my guest, Fred Bunch, will discuss Clear 30, a digital cannabis break and long-term support program for adolescents and young adults.
how do you make it easy for someone to do something hard? That is at the core of how we try to build our behavior change program of Clear 30. So you can follow us and get tips to reduce your cannabis use for free.
That's the Kingfisher Project on the Local Edition, right here on Radio Catskill at 6 tonight.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And yeah, that was Bill Williams giving you the 30-second preview of the Kingfisher Project tonight. But he's here live in the studio to give us the longer version of what's going on tonight. Bill Williams, thanks for being here.
Oh, you're quite welcome. My pleasure.
So I want to just remind folks about the Kingfisher Project. Can you just remind folks about what the Kingfisher Project is and what you try to do with the stories that you tell?
Well, it was started, I don't even know how many years ago, but a number of years ago. I'm going to say somewhere around 8 or 10. That's a wild guess. By Judy Pizzal for this station. Judy lost a daughter due to heroin. And she was able to, in her daughter's memory, start the Kingfisher Project. And they began it once a month. I believe it was once a month. Maybe it was even more frequent than that. A show called the Kingfisher Project. There was a whole story about an essay that her daughter wrote when she was in high school. And the high school teacher read the essay at her daughter's memorial service. And it was about a Kingfisher bird. Excuse me, it was about a bird that her daughter saved. And the Kingfisher Project has been running ever since then. And early on, I was invited, a local listener said, I was living in Manhattan at the time, local listener said, you should get in touch with these people because you've been doing some writing and they might be interested in what you have to say. And I was on as a guest a number of times. And then they asked me they said, you seem to know a lot of people.
And would you like to be the host and producer of this?
Yeah, and that's what's happened.
Yeah, and so we have this every month on Radio Catskill during the local edition, and you bring stories of prevention and how to tackle the opioid and drug problem in our country. You speak to a lot of great people. Tonight's show, the January edition, you're speaking to Dr. Fred Munch, the co-founder of Clear 30 and a former president of the Partnership to End Addiction. Tell us a little bit about Dr. Fred Munch, and we're going to have a clip of your interview, but tell us a little bit about him.
Well, first off, he's a remarkable man, and he is one of many. I did a rough count before I came in today. Over the years, we've had somewhere around 13 or 14 people on the show that are in recovery from substance use in one way or another. Fred is one of those. And then what they've gone on to do. And he's a clinical psychologist, but he's also very interested in technology and what technology can do. So, and he was interested in that when he was the head of the Partnership to End Addiction. In fact, the partnership changed its name from Partnership for Drug-Free Kids. They merged with another group and became Partnership to End Addiction. That was under Fred's guidance. And then Fred helped develop some programs that the partnership would use that people could access. He moved on and he's developed this program on his own, the Clear 30 that he's the CEO of now.
Yeah, a digital program. It helps folks to basically take a break for 30 days and kind of be more reflective about their relationship with substances, behaviors. They're kind of specifically focused on cannabis, is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And even more specifically on the 18 to 25 age group.
All right.
They'd like to work down because certainly one of the things with cannabis is the sooner you start, the more problems you're likely to encounter.
Let's listen to a portion of your conversation with Dr. Fred Munch, which will be on the Kingfisher Project tonight, where he kind of outlines what Clear 30's goals
are. Sure thing.
Clear 30 was created to help people just take a break, very similar to Dry January or other challenges. And so what we did was we started with a text messaging program and we iterated. Now we have an iOS app. We're building a Android app as well. We launched about 6 months ago. But Clear 30 essentially guides people through a 30-day break. And there's a number of different components to it. One is a daily message. So the first day preparation is about engineering your environment and making sure you get rid of your weed, you talk to your friends, you get some support. Day one is really about understanding withdrawal. How are you going to taper? Are you not going to taper? And we'll guide you through a taper if you're tapering. Day two is about managing cravings, and day three is sleep and exercise. So we guide people daily through physical withdrawal, psychological withdrawal, building new habits, seeking other support, understanding pitfalls of falling back into the same patterns day by day. Each day has a message, and a long narrative and information about the day. A meditation. So you go through a daily meditation in the morning, just about, 3 or 4 minutes just to get you set. We have links to outside groups. This is one of the things we notice is people don't like to get people off their app. We link to Reddit. We link to YouTube. There's so much great information out there. So we want to let people know, hey, there's other information out there that you should be looking for, including professional resources. We also link to internally, not link, but we have an AI chatbot. And the AI chatbot there's two components to it. One is on the withdrawal day, it says, hey, based on my assessment, because people fill out an assessment, then when we come in and we tailor it, we really personalize it to their break experience. We say, based on my assessment, help me come up with a withdrawal plan. And they just click on the AI button and the AI comes up with a withdrawal plan for them. But then they can interact with the AI and say, hey, this is not really working for me. Do you have any other ideas? It's an educational bot. It's not a therapist. We make that very clear. But we provide people with hyper personalized care based on their own needs.
So great. I don't have to start on January 1st the way I would dryuary, and I don't have to start on April 21st. I can start any day and go for 30 days.
That's
Or longer if I choose.
And if you choose a moderation program or abstinence, you can go for as long as you want. Yeah.
So if I'm in the middle of Clear 30 and I have a day when can't help it, gotta have a hit.
Yep.
How does the program respond to that? How do you deal with that?
In terms of our streaks, we don't give people streaks for not smoking. We give people streaks for checking in and interacting with the app, right? You check in and say, I smoked today. For me, there's nothing braver than someone doing that and saying, I smoked today, because there's a feeling of shame already when you've lapsed or not met your goal. Haven't met your goal. That's okay. Let's go. Today's a new day, blah, blah, blah. If they smoked yesterday, but they also say, would you like to reach out to somebody? Like, are you doing okay? When someone lapses and or full on just forgets their behavior change goals, they need social support. So we know that we have to do both reward them for being on track, but also give them social support.
How do people find Clear 30?
Google Clear 30. Just type Clear 30, all one word, Clear 30, and it's right there. And you can go to the App Store. Right now it's just iOS, but you go and you can see some of our videos. We've really, so as I mentioned, Bill, our focus is 18 to 25. We have a great TikTok presence as well. We have videos. We go out and we have something called Weed Talk, where our staff go out and interview people on the street about weed and talk to them. We have some fun ads that we've created as well. So go and I highly recommend people checking it out. Clear 30 is about the individual and someone's intention, not about judgment.
And that is Bill Williams, host of the Kingfisher Project, speaking to Dr. Fred Bunch, the co-founder of Clear 30 and former president of the Partnership to End Addiction. And you can hear that full conversation tonight on the local edition when we bring you our monthly installment of the Kingfisher Project. Bill, it's interesting to hear in this day and age of hearing so many negative things or scary things about artificial intelligence and AI and apps use, it's interesting and good to hear, AI for good in some ways, that they're using this to help folks manage their expectations with cannabis.
Yeah, absolutely. And Fred, I mean, he's brilliant. He's got eight. Excuse me for being so hoarse today.
It's all right.
He holds eight patents related to balancing the autonomic nervous system through smartwatch. And I mean, He knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's doing when he gets into this stuff. This isn't like, oh, let's just throw some AI in.
Yeah, he led the largest mobile messaging addiction study in the world. So this is a speciality of his, and it's great that you're able to bring this to listeners to the Kingfisher Project on the Local Edition. As we move into 2025 here, do you have some goals that you have for the Kingfisher Project and some things you'd like to bring to folks? You've been doing a great job of bringing like national figures. I know there were some White House figures that you've spoken to, other folks, so authors of great books, Dr. Fred, we've mentioned here. Some other people you want to talk to or other goals you have for the program?
I mentioned this before. The number of people, there are two groups. There are 13 or 14 people that have been on the show over the years who themselves have had substance use problems and been gone on to do other things. Author, public health officials, a lobbyist in D.C., a judge, an actor, a doctor, a couple journalists, a musician, another author, a psychiatrist, a student, and then eight or so parents. And the reason I mention all that is because addiction is still so prevalent. So if there's any goal, it's to continue to find people and find ways to get the message out there and to give people resources so that they can change their behavior or help people in their family, in their neighborhood, in their community.
Well, we're grateful you're bringing the Kingfisher Project message here. And again, folks can hear it tonight on the Local Edition at 6. Bill Williams with the Kingfisher Project speaking to Dr. Fred Munch, co-founder of Clear 30. There's more information about the Kingfisher Project at thekingfisherproject.org. Bill Williams, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, it's a new year, and we're moving forward to some new personal growth, but Maggie Fitzpatrick, the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat, says nothing changes if nothing changes. We'll learn more after this break. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
Fasten your seatbelts. It's nearly time to blast off with the Retro Cocktail Hour. Daryl Brogdon here inviting you to drop in at the Underground Martini Bunker for classic tiki tunes, private eye jazz, swinging movie music, and other stereo overstimulation. The Retro Cocktail Hour.
Wednesday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Forget the seatbelts. Fire up the cocktail shaker.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, who's in the mood for some nachos? Everyone! Well, we're serving up the history and the legacy of this iconic snack food.
The story of the nacho is really a story of the loss of an apostrophe. It's Nachos Special, and that's the original name.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, every Tuesday, we speak to Maggie Fitzpatrick. She's the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat, and her column is called Moving Toward Health. Hello and Happy New Year.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. It's been a while since I've been here.
We took a little break for the holidays because, you know, there's a lot of food and drink to be had, but now we're back. New year.
We're back.
New us. Now, your article this time begins with a conversation with your coach about becoming a morning person. Share more about that moment and why it stuck with you.
Yeah. So one of my, I guess you could call it a New Year's resolution, intention, goal, something that's just coming up for me at this time is that I want to wake up earlier in the morning. And it has been very challenging for me to do that. And I used to coach sports, so a lot of my work ended up being at the end of the day, right? So my sleep schedule got shifted for the last couple of years. And so I would be going to sleep 11, midnight, 1 a.m., somewhere around there. And then I'd be waking up between 7 a.m. on an early day, 9 a.m. on a later day. And I just don't want to have that sleep schedule anymore. So I'm like, I want to shift this. And so I'm talking to him and I'm like, you know, I really want to wake up earlier, but this is so hard for me. And he said, well, nothing changes if nothing changes. And that really bothered me at first. I'm not going to lie.
Well, how did that initial frustration with that advice, which sounds a little frustrating, turned into a realization that it's key to this transformation, this intention or this goal?
So he said, nothing changes if nothing changes. And I was thinking, how dare he say that I'm not doing good enough? Like, I'm not doing enough. I'm not changing enough things, whatever.
I am the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat.
Are you kidding me? I can't believe it. And so I think our initial reaction is like, whatever, I'm going to brush it off. I'm going to try to ignore it. But I couldn't stop thinking about it. And everything I was doing, I was thinking about this phrase. And so eventually I got to the point where I was saying, well, of course I can't wake up earlier because I'm doing the same thing that I used to do when I would wake up later. I expected myself to be able to wake up earlier in the morning without changing anything that I was doing at night. And so, of course, it wasn't working.
So was that the main reason you hadn't adjusted your sleep, the schedule earlier, even though you wanted to wake up earlier? I mean, you mentioned that your work schedule no longer requires late nights. So yeah. What was it that was stopping you?
I think it was just routine, habit, right? And routines are something that can really help us when we're trying to reach a goal because it takes out a lot of the pressure to make the same decision over and over again, right? We can create a routine around something and that helps us just do it instead of have to think about it every single time. But sometimes that routine, we continue to do it even when it no longer aligns with the new thing that we want to achieve. And that's what I was experiencing where I wanted to wake up earlier in the morning, but my nighttime routine was the same as it was when I was waking up later in the day. And so, of course, we're not going to have success because the routine that I'm doing at night is not leading me to be successful in the morning. And so I did have that realization. I'm hearing his words in my head over and over and over. And I'm like, you know, actually, he's right. If I don't change what I'm doing at night, then of course, I'm not going to see changes in the morning.
How did you identify some of those changes that needed to be made in your routines that weren't supporting this desired outcome?
So the first thing that I did was I needed to pay attention to what I was doing, right? I think sometimes when we get so far into a routine, we don't even realize what it is that we're doing because we just do it. And so I needed to notice those things. And the first thing I noticed was that I wasn't starting to get ready for bed until 10:30 p.m. maybe, right? And so then I have to wash my face, maybe take a shower, brush my teeth, make sure the dishwasher's on, turn off all the lights. Like there's just a whole list of things you do before you go to sleep, right? And so then before I know it, it's midnight and I'm not asleep yet. And so I needed to recognize that I needed to start doing that earlier in the evening. So now I decided, okay, when 9 p.m. comes, I'm going to start getting ready for bed. Because then by the time I do all of those things, I just end up in bed and it's earlier in the evening, right? And 9 p.m. was a good time for me too, because I needed to figure out what time I wanted to wake up in the morning to feel my best. I don't want to just wake up at 4:30 because someone said that that's good for me, right? I don't like waking up before 5 a.m. I did that for a long time and I don't like that. And so I needed to find a time that was good for me. So 6 a.m. is a time that I feel good waking up at that time of the day. And it works with my husband's schedule of how he's getting ready for work in the morning too. I don't like competing in the morning for the bathroom. I don't know if you experienced that, but that's not my favorite thing ever. So I needed to figure out what those times were where it would also allow me to get 8 hours of sleep. And so I did that. So now that I recognize those things, that's when I can start to make changes.
Did you encounter any setbacks along the way as you worked to adjust to this new routine, and how did you overcome them?
Oh, for sure.
You're starting to nod before I finish my question.
Yeah. We're not perfect over here, okay? Just because we have an intention around something doesn't mean that it always goes according to plan, right? So I think we have to be honest with ourselves. And even last night, I'm sitting at the island with Cosmos, my husband, and we're just like chatting and it's 9:15. I look at the clock and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's past my getting ready for bedtime. I need to stop what I'm doing and to get ready for bed. And something else that happened was we were going to go for a walk and it would have put me past that time. And I had to say, even though I would have used to have said yes to this walk, now I have to say no because I'm prioritizing this new sleep routine. And there are days where I do things that keep me up too late. And we have to just be honest with ourselves and recognize that, okay, I did this. It didn't work out perfectly. How can I adjust moving forward? And if we're willing to be honest, then it's easy to make that change.
You know, of course, the new year, a great time to evaluate and update routines. And we're flooded with messaging about that at this time of year. I was in a store somewhere and I noticed like the end cap of one of the aisles was all like fitness related products. And I was like, okay, got it. Got the message. How could someone go about reviewing their current routines and identifying where some changes might be needed?
Yeah, I think it's, we have to take some time to reflect, right? So however you like to do that might be different. I like to write personally. You could have a conversation with a friend. Maybe you have a therapist. There's many different ways that we can reflect on what we're doing, but we have to figure out what our goal is. So for me, it's sleep right now. It could be something else health related. It could be something work related. It could be anything, right? We have to look at what that goal is and then get curious about what else in our life is going to impact that, right? And you might be creating barriers for yourself in ways that you have never expected. And so sometimes I think having a conversation with another person is really helpful because they might be able to point out blind spots that you're unable to see. But I wasn't even thinking about what I was doing before I was going to sleep impacting my ability to wake up earlier. And that seems so simple. Like if I were telling you, oh, I want to wake up earlier, that might be your first thought of like, well, what are you doing before you go to sleep? And it didn't even cross my mind. Right. And so it's important that we recognize those things. And then we have to actively change the routine. We have to make that change so that way we can see the other change that we want. Right. And so we have to make a plan of what we're going to do instead. So that way we can see the result that we're looking for. Because, you know, the whole premise of the article is if nothing changes. So if we don't change the initial action, then we're not going to get a change in the outcome. And so we have to get curious on what those initial actions could be and then figure out how we want to change them.
How do you feel now about waking up earlier?
It's not always fun. I'm not going to lie. It's really not. But I feel better during the day when I do it. And that's worth it to me, right? It's when it's 6 a.m. and it's not light out right now and it's freezing cold, I have to do things like turn the light on in my bedroom so that way I don't go back to bed. Or I have to put on a song, or I have to leave my alarm going until I can get my phone to turn it off so I'm already out of bed, right? There's like things that I have to do in order to trigger their new routine so that way I don't just fall back into going to sleep. But I feel better. I feel calmer during the day when I wake up earlier. I feel more energized in a positive way during the day when I wake up earlier. And by the time the afternoon comes, I'm like, wow, I accomplished so much. You know, yeah. It makes you feel good. And so even though it's challenging to make that change, you'll know that it's the right thing because you'll feel better when you do it.
Maggie Fitzpatrick is the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat, bringing us a really good message for the beginning of the year. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We are going to wrap it up for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Programming note, we're bringing you coverage of the services for former President Jimmy Carter. The funeral service in the U.S. Capitol is scheduled for today, but there's been a time change. The special coverage will begin at 4 this afternoon. That's because of the winter snowstorm that socked much of the country. It's causing delays in the nation's capital today. At this point, there's no change to the Thursday service, which we'll bring you as well. We'll update you if that changes, but today, you can listen to NPR's special coverage of the service for former President Jimmy Carter in the Capitol Rotunda beginning at 4 here on Radio Catskill. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Hi there. This is Brian, host of The Secret Show. Friday nights at 9. I'll be playing a mix of indie, alternative, college, rock, and pop. Some new music and some old classics. That's The Secret Show, Friday nights at 9, only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, there's a wind advisory in effect. As you can probably tell, it's windy out there. Cold, a couple of snow flurries, high near 20. Tonight's low 13 with the wind still gusting. Tomorrow, cold wind, colder, high of only 16. Tomorrow night's low 11. It's 11 o'clock.